Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time, a CatSource family production. In this episode, we discuss life in the NFL, sports and business, and the Ohio State Buckeyes culture. This podcast exists in large part because of CatCM, the content marketing business inside CatSource Inc. CatCM is excited to bring the content marketing services used at CatSource to you. Learn more by visiting catcm.com. Our guest today is Chimdi Chekwa, current NFL free agent and entrepreneur. Chimdi is a former Ohio State Buckeyes football player and current entrepreneur as a co-owner of the Pit Barbecue Grill in Columbus, Ohio. He also has his hands in other ventures that we touch on in this chat. You may remember Chimdi from his days with the Ohio State Buckeyes, where he was a first-team All-American cornerback. After college, Chimdi was drafted in the fourth round by the Oakland Raiders in the 2011 NFL Draft. Through much perseverance and motivation, Chimdi gives us insight around why he is so passionate about sports and entrepreneurship. Chimdi's examples of self-awareness and constant improvement were on full display in our chat. His incredible mindset and desire to succeed has us so excited to feature him on this podcast. And anytime I get a chance to talk Buckeye football, I'm taking it. And with so much to talk about, let's get right into this episode and welcome Ohio State Buckeye great, Chimdi Chekwa. I heard you on Beanie Wells and Boom Heron's podcast, and you guys were talking about, you know, the days playing with Coach Tressel. Incredible. I think it's been an incredible run. I mean, Ohio State's been on an incredible run for decades, of course, but when Tressel got here, I think the culture changed even more. I mean, just obviously looking at how Ohio State's handling, you know, playing Michigan and beating Michigan seems like almost every time they go out. But there's a culture there. And just talk a little bit about that, because you came early on. I think Tressel had been here a few years, but you came here early on when Coach Tressel got here. Talk a little bit about what Coach Tressel means to you as a person and as a player.
Yeah, I think Tressel was just a good leader, a leader of men, or at least a leader of boys transitioning into becoming men. He did a good job of instilling in us what's important, reminding us what's important, giving us tools on how to actually maintain our focus and kind of cut through all the distractions and stuff that are out there. And to be honest, you know, coming from high school to Ohio State, I just knowing Tressel and pretty much my high school coach, that type of leadership was kind of what I thought every player had, you know, every coach did, but it wasn't until I got to NFL and kind of was away from Tressel for a while that I realized he was unique in that. Not only that, he also did a great job of connecting with people. And connecting with players' families and remembering everything about their families and their friends and stuff like that. So he was unique in that he really knew how to connect with individuals, and I think that helped me throughout my time at Ohio State and after.
I'm sure. And so, like, you go to the NFL and you're having conversations with guys in practice, and, you know, you're sitting down for dinner, and they're probably asking you about your experience at Ohio State. So it's What did other people go through? They just not have that type of leadership at their school, because I think so many people took it for granted, you know, people on the outside, I'm talking about, of what a coach like Jim Tressel could mean to the program and to players like yourself. And I think it's a great point, because you don't know unless you're in there. And then hearing you tell the story some years later, man, it just makes you look back. And I've always admired Coach Tressel. You know, from reading his book, The Winner's Manual, and obviously talking to a player like yourself that lived that, you know, how does that conversation come up when you're talking to other NFL players? Because you're all of a sudden you're getting with a group of guys that are coming from all over the country, right? So many different programs.
Yeah. A lot of guys had different experiences. Some guys had similar with their coaches and their schools and stuff. A lot of guys had different experiences. I mean, you got the NFL, there's no discrimination when it comes to what school you're going to come from. You got guys coming from small schools, D3 schools. You got guys coming from the biggest universities. good football teams, bad football teams. Like, there's a really diverse in that aspect. But, yeah, guys have so many different experiences. I know a lot of guys would say, you know, I wish I went to a school at Ohio State. I wish I played for a guy like Tressel. I mean, that's just the reality of it. Not everybody was able to benefit from that type of culture. It helped guys in different ways. Like, some guys didn't have that type of leadership, but they kind of grew up early. They kind of had to make it to the NFL. They had to kind of find their way and grow up a little bit sooner, and that allowed them, when they got in the NFL, to already have that kind of drive and focus to, you know, be able to dictate their own schedules and not have to rely on the coach to direct them and lead them in any way. But I know for me, I think the biggest thing Tressel did for me is to be able to understand football was football, and there is life outside of that you need to make sure that you build yourself up as an individual while you're also improving yourself on the field.
Absolutely. Well, like you're saying, there's a lot of different ways to get there. You might be fortunate to have someone like Tressel in your life, and other people might have been unfortunate to have someone else. Excuse me, but there's different ways to get there. Like you said, those that, you know, see the obstacle that may be in their way, they can overcome that by, like you said, growing up early. You know, and there's a couple things I want to touch on in a minute. We're going to get into transition a little bit, but comparison, right? So I think we got to end the debate once and for all. You're from New Orleans and you lived in Florida. You played high school ball in Florida. You come to Ohio State. And so you've seen it, right? You've seen football in some of the biggest and the best states that are known out there. And we talk about who's DBU ultimately. Who is DBU? LSU is obviously talked about a lot. Ohio State, I know there's some schools in Florida, maybe somewhere out in Texas and California want to claim that. But you've seen them all up close. So let's end that debate right now. Who is DBU?
It's definitely Ohio State, without question. If I was to choose a second school, I would probably lean towards Texas. And that may be because I interacted with a lot of guys who went to Texas. But outside of that, it's definitely Ohio State. That's without question.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm from
Buffalo. No comparison.
No comparison. So, and I agree because, you know, I'm from Buffalo, New York. And I remember the days when Antoine Winfield, Nate Clements come along, and it's seemingly like constantly, every year, you know, someone like you's there, and you know, a lot of recent draft picks, Marshawn Lattimore, Denzel Ward, and I mean, it just, you go pick a name from a year, right? And you're going to find someone who just athlete, talent, you know, technical skill, all these different things. What is it about Ohio State that's, you know, turning out year after year incredible defensive backs?
I think, so there's two things. One is they're recruiting well. So a lot of these guys are good going in for Ohio State. And the other part of it is development. I think one thing, especially playing corner, you need to be self-aware and understand what they're like in anything you do. But so much at the cornerback position, because there's coaches who tell you what you need to do on the field. Like, this is where you're supposed to be at. Here's the position you're supposed to be in. But there's so many nuances in the gray area when it comes to playing corner, where you can't necessarily coach everyone the same. Like, people move differently, they react differently. So you have to figure out how you're going to play this position best. Like, what fits you? How should your stance be? How should you react to certain things? And I think just being a smart player helps you understand yourself and develop in that way, so that you'll be able to maximize your full potential. I think about a guy like me, Malcolm Jenkins, who we weren't necessarily five-star guys, right? So we were a guy that people would have projected forward to be All-Americans and to make it to the NFL. But we had great college careers, and I think the part of that is coaching, and the other part is being able to take that coaching and then apply it, say, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do, but let me make it fit my style of play, that I can make sure I maximize my value.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it seems to me like you have to rise to that level, right? There's an expectation. You show up there, like you just said, this is DBU, and whether you're at Texas, LSU, Ohio State, or somewhere else, there's an expectation that's put on you, which is a lot of pressure you have to deal with as a young man growing up. But at the same time, it seems like there's a culture of helping everybody out, from the coaching staff to the players to even former players. I mean, you watch a game on Saturday, and you like you said, if Malcolm Jenkins, you know, or someone like that has an off day in the NFL, they're possibly coming back and on the sidelines, and you see them like helping these guys out. If they make a mistake, you know, pushing them, you get back out there, you're going to be okay. And it seems to me like you got to raise that level, but also not only raising that level, there's a lot of support out there. It's a huge support system at Ohio State, both, you know, when you come there and then after you leave. And to me, it seems like this culture is incredible. And you turn on like the spring game. I mean, so many former players are coming back and just still a part of it. They don't leave and just leave forever. They're there. You know, it's like a fraternity, if you will, of just guys that want to support each other. But at the same time, you have to raise your own level to get to that level, to stay there and to be a part of that, right?
Yeah. I mean, the torch is passed when you're at that point where you're taking it over. You have to, I mean, you know the guys who came before you. You see everybody's pictures and stuff hanging up. You watch their film. You take part of what they've done and try to add it to your game, and you try to raise your level. And then the other thing is competition. You know, you get a great group of guys, and a lot of the guys who don't see the field will probably, to be honest, and start at other schools. So you get that type of competition and a lot of the guy who can figure it out or the best guy to rise to the top, and that breeds these kind of players that come out of Ohio State.
So you transition, like you said, you're coming to Ohio State. There's a big transition, but there's also the transition from college to the NFL. And we're going to bounce around here a little bit. But transitioning from Ohio State to the NFL, around that time, I know Ohio State was going through some stuff. And I don't know if you can speak on any of this, because you've already spoken about what an important person Jim Tressel was in your life. And it was disappointing, I think, for a lot of Ohio State fans that the media just decided and the NCAA decided that we're going to put Ohio State in a bad light. And yeah, maybe some mistakes were made and all that, but it was disappointing from the standpoint of you hear what you have to say about someone like Jim Tressel. How disappointed were you in all that went on and all the chatter that you hear behind the scenes of people who really just don't know what they're talking about?
Yeah, it was disappointing. I mean, it's one of those things in the media. I mean, whatever's going to drive traffic, whatever's going to drive viewers, it's what they do. So whenever you can tear down something big, something great, I mean, when things are going good, build them up, because we're going to get a lot of viewers. And then if we see something that can, whether it's a little bit of smoke and we can make something of it, they take that opportunity. It was very disappointing for me because, I mean, if you really step back and looked at what actually happened and looked at really the true details of what happened and thought about it in terms of being a part of the NCAA, and what's happening in the NCAA, the way it's structured, you'll be like, yeah, this is really a non-issue. Now, if a rule was broken, a rule was broken, right? That has to be carried out, however your rules are. But the way the way the fire in the media was created, to the point where, you know, reporters would hit me up on like Facebook and ask me questions like, so what happened? Is there anything you can tell me? And I'm like, nothing. Like, there's nothing huge that happened. There's no big story. It was just this very, very small thing in the grand scheme of things. So I was very disappointed. Never changed the way I feel about Tressel at all. To be honest, it kind of hurt me that he had to go through all that stuff. But I mean, that's what the media does. That's the way it is. And at the end of the day, perception is reality. So if Ohio State's always in the news about something negative, regardless of what it is, that story's going to be taken and blown out of proportion.
That's right. I mean, sports media is, in many times, it's not everybody, right? But it's clickbait. And then you get the court of public opinion, where they force the issue to say, well, everyone got so excited because finally Ohio State's out of the picture. We can eliminate them because they're done. And, you know, for a minute, that kind of happened, it seemed like, but then it changed again. So Tressel's gone on to do amazing things. He's a leader. You hear him talking to, like you said, former players on podcasts, and you know, he's on social media sharing his wisdom, and I think we're all lucky that he's still doing those things, and obviously you've lived with it. But then Urban Meyer, and you're gone at this point, you've gone to the NFL, Urban Meyer shows up at Ohio State, and it was like, hold on a second. We just, as the media and the, let's call them the haters of Ohio State, we thought Ohio State was out of the picture, and now you're going to go in and bring in Urban Meyer. And Urban had, you know, there's a negative perception about him and what he did at Florida and how he's, you know, grooming his players. And, you know, he shows up, and I think people who are part of the Ohio State program realize, man, Urban's a good guy, and he's got a lot of good things going on, but there's, for whatever reason, there's a negative perception followed him, and the haters just kind of wanted to continue to bring it down. Were you around the program while Urban was there, and you know, what was your thoughts on what he was doing?
Yeah, I've been around, and I mean, my thoughts are, you know, he's an amazing guy to come in, recruit. He's always recruited well, and to continue that, and then continue to develop players to the type of guys you see going in the first round, second round, third round every year. I thought it was a great job, and he's done a good job in a leadership position. Also, getting guys the necessary resources and things they need to be able to build up their learning, their understanding outside of football. Internships and all those things. So I thought he's done a great job, and I really expect Ryan Day to continue that at Ohio State tradition.
Yeah, so they've had some changes on the defensive side of the ball, right? Some coaches have come in. Jeff Hafley, not sure if you've had any relationship with him in the past, but going to be helping out, obviously, with the defensive backs. And their defense last year wasn't, I think, what you guys would expect it to be, but I would expect a big improvement this year. Have you been around the current, you know, crop of defensive backs that are going to be at Ohio State with Coach Ryan Day, you know, taking on his first year as the full-time head coach?
I haven't been around the current. So I've been around the guys who were here last year. So not the freshmen that have come in. And I haven't necessarily been around the new coach, the new defensive coaches or anything like that. Just the guys who were here last year. Actually, Coach Trevor Johnson, who was the DB coach last year, the cornerback coach last year, was my coach back when I played at Ohio State. So he came back, and they have a new guy there. So I haven't been around this new crop completely, this new crop of cornerbacks. But, you know, I have high expectations for them. I thought they, as a defense, they underachieved last year. I didn't agree with everything that was done schematically. So I'm hoping that changes, and I have real high expectations. I think the guys that are there now have a great ability. So I'm excited to see what they do this year.
Well, it's interesting that you say that you didn't agree with a lot of the things that they were doing with their scheme. And I think a lot of people, you know, whether it's fans or media, you try not to play Monday morning quarterback, but I think there was a big agreement in that, well, wait, what is going on? Like, why is this happening? Why are they just, you know, busting out 80-yard runs, like, left and right, it almost seemed like? I mean, this team is too good for that. But that's just it, right? Sometimes it just doesn't work, and for whatever reason, and there's a lot of moving parts to football. I'm always amazed by how a college football program that can have success, because there's so much happening in the game of football. I mean, you have 11 players on the field for each side. You got coaches, you got people up in the booth. I mean, there's just communication, there's athleticism, there's so much has to go. And you living on the island on the outside playing cornerback, I mean, you could be the one that makes the mistake. Everyone else does their job, and next thing you know, you're the receiver's running in for a touchdown, and they're all looking at you. I mean, how did you live in that world? You know, obviously you played it for a long time, but there's so much happening in the game of football. How did you, Chimdi, you know, deal with that?
It's really just challenging yourself to be the best that you can really be. Like I've a long time ago, I was at Ohio State. I committed myself to always getting better. And as long as I'm always getting better, then I'm gonna do my job. And then from there, I'm counting on the other 10 guys to do their job to make sure that this whole thing works. That's the great thing about football. If one guy doesn't do his job, it can really ruin the entire defense. So, you know, a lot of times when we're like, I don't like the scheme, you don't really truly know if it was the scheme or if it was the one individual just not getting to the spot that he was supposed to get to, right? So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it applies in business, right? I mean, we're going to get into that in a little bit and talk about more transition into entrepreneurship. But going back to playing at Ohio State, so you came in, I think your first year was 06, if I'm not mistaken. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were there for the 1-2 game, Ohio State, Michigan. Was that the craziest environment you'd ever been in?
I want to say yes, but I'm not completely sure. I've been in a few crazy environments.
You had some things. I mean, historically speaking, though, I was at that game. My father and my brother, and my parents met at Ohio State, which I was born right into the family of Buckeyes. And you know, my father always said, "This is it, man. And if you ever even consider going to that team up north, the school up north, you can just leave, right?" But we were at that 06 game, and just you know, the history behind it. Bo dying the day before. I mean, it's just a crazy atmosphere to get that environment. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and it was. And it was my first year. I was a freshman. Like, that first year went by so fast. So it's like I remember, like, three things from my first year. But I do remember after winning the game, which I thought was crazy, was Ohio State was going to, like, change the field or whatever the next year. I remember – people picking up grass, like they were taking like blocks of grass off of the field after the game and taking it home. And I remember later on that night going out, walking down High Street, and seeing somebody walking down the street that night with a box of grass in their hand from the game. I thought that might be the craziest thing I've seen.
Yeah. But that's Ohio State, right? That's the culture. And I heard you talking about this as well on a podcast where it's just Saturdays in Columbus, you know, High Street, it just gets going early and it doesn't stop until, you know, it doesn't matter what time it gets. It's a noon game, a mid-afternoon, or, you know, my goodness, if it's a night game, forget about it. But it's just like, how do you explain it, man? Like, you show up there and you came from Florida, and like you said, you spend time in Louisiana, you come up to Columbus, and did you even know what was going on before you ever got there? Like, what this craziness called Buckeye Nation is all about?
I didn't fully know. My picture of Columbus, Ohio was so completely messed up because I didn't really know much about Ohio. So Columbus, I knew Columbus was the capital city. But at the same time, I thought it was like a small college town, which didn't really make sense. So I didn't realize how many people were actually in Columbus. So, you know, living in the South, college towns, like you go to Gainesville, Florida, on Saturdays, I mean, football is all there is going on in the entire place. So you expect everybody to just kind of, you expect the area to just shut down for football because it's, you know, it's a smaller area. But then when you come to Columbus, you're like, damn, there's a lot of people here, right?
Yep.
And then on a Saturday, it's like, it feels like a small town. Like, it feels like everybody is focused on the football game. And it's just amazing to me that how so many people could be on one accord and be supporting this one thing. And it's college football. It's not a professional team, although I would argue that it's more, you get more support around Ohio State football, and it's run in a way that's more professional.
I would agree with that. I think there's a few cities in the NFL, and you probably played in different stadiums. And, you know, being from Buffalo, I think the support they have it reminds me almost of a college town. But when you show up to Columbus on Ohio State game day, I haven't been to all the different places, but I don't know if there's much like it. And I think as a player, I would imagine, man, you just got to eat it up, and you just it's probably pretty easy to get up on game day. Wearing the scarlet and gray, and you know, again, a lot of pressure to live up to. I mean, the expectations every single year our national championship. I mean, first of all, win the Big Ten. You got to beat Michigan, right? It's just, you have to beat them because it's going to ruin everybody's year if you don't. And then you got to get, now you have to get in the playoff, which is a little bit for you, but you had to get in the BCS. You got to get in the playoff. You got to go win the national championship. I mean, these expectations are enormous. Do you feel that as a player? You know, because I've talked to different people and everyone's got, like you said before, some people go to smaller schools. They wanted to go to a school because they wanted to play right away. Some people want to go to the big schools because they want to do all that possibly and also have an opportunity to play or win a national championship. But I've talked to players that, you know, a national championship necessarily wasn't what they were all about. There's other things that are going on, and they had incredible experience in college. Like when you were at Ohio State, did you feel that, man, we can't lose if we let a bad play happen, that's not good, let alone losing a game or let alone losing to the team up north or possibly not making it to the ultimate goal? Because there's so much that goes on in sports, right? So much going on in football. There's a lot of ring chasing, perhaps. Like you'd see that in the NBA, but it can't just all be about winning championships. I know it is, right, to some level, but it's that journey, it's that experience. I mean, but talking to someone like yourself who's played at high levels in high school, college, and the NFL, talk to us a little bit about just the journey in and of itself and the expectations that you felt as a player playing for Ohio State.
Yeah, I think that ultimate goal of winning a championship is kind of embedded into the journey for you. So it's like, in the summer when I'm lifting weights or doing some type of conditioning, I'm thinking, man, I need to make sure I get this in today so I can be the type of player that's going to be a all Big Ten type caliber player so I can ultimately be on the big stage and win a championship and make that big play versus Michigan and stuff like that. So you definitely that ultimate goal is kind of ingrained into you day to day, but the expectations are super high. I think a lot of guys who are capable, they don't fully do the things that they're capable of because of that pressure and because of the expectations at Ohio State. And I think part of the coach's job is to make sure that the players can understand the goal, but also stay loose. And because it's a lot of guys crack under pressure. And I think coaches can help with recognizing, taking a guy and saying, look, these are the expectations, but you need to do these specific things and focus on these specific things, and you'll be able to reach those heights and reach those expectations. But yeah, I mean, at Ohio State, national championship or bust. And if you don't reach that level, then it's okay, we got to be a Big Ten champion. And if you can't get to that, we got to beat Michigan. But I remember playing, and always feeling like if we lost two games, it felt like a failed season. So if we lost one game, we're like, damn, we may not, you know, you lose one, especially at my time, it was there was no playoffs or anything. So you lose one, it's like, okay, we're not going to make it to the national championship. Now we have to win the Big Ten, and we can't lose another game. If you lose another game, it was like, man. We go back. We watch ESPN and sitting there like, dang, we suck, man. We lost two games.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, with two, you might still have an opportunity based on how things played out. But then the third loss is like, oh man, this is a bad season for us. So it was the margin of error was so small, and we understood that, and we embraced it.
Yeah. Well, there's a few things going on there. First of all, it's individual, and you touched on this earlier. It's individually do your job, right? And we talk about that in our business all the time. You know, you can overthink things because you're trying to do so many other people's jobs. But if you just do the tasks that you're supposed to do and help out where you can help out, you know, we can get to where we want to go. But first of all, you have to do your job. That's you winning the championship that day. But then also you're talking about the ultimate goal, right, being the championship, and that's ingrained in the journey. So you have an eye on that ultimate prize. And then let's say you lose, right? Mm-hmm. The three games, right? So there are failures. There is winning and losing in sports, right? I know we talk about eighth place trophies, and it's kind of crazy what society breeds. But there's a team, there's a football game, there's a team that wins, and there's a team that loses. And there might have been bad calls throughout or lucky situations. Who knows? But someone won and someone lost, right? But if you had a good season, you know, three losses, I get it. Ohio State, you're like, man, we did not succeed this year. But you have one loss, right? You look at the year after. So I would look at, first of all, let's go back, 06. You win. You have an incredible season. Heisman Trophy quarterback. You go on. You beat Michigan, the 1-2. I mean, that's the game to remember. I get it. I think it was like 6 or 7 weeks later, which, first of all, to me is just, that was insane at the time. Like, hold on. Now Ohio State beats Michigan, and you got to wait. I think they looked at the Philadelphia Eagles played like 7 or 8 games in between when Ohio State played beat Michigan and then had to play Florida for the national championship. I was like, when we walked out of that stadium that day, and I'm not a part of it at all, and I have no idea. I'm like, man, I don't know how you get up after that game again, and you have to wait 2 months almost to play. But then you go out and you lose, and it wasn't a great game. I remember Ted Ginn gets hurt, like, the opening kickoff. I mean, things happen. But, like, is that an unsuccessful season because you didn't win the national championship? I mean, I didn't see it like that at all. Yeah, it's disappointing in the time, and it probably takes a little bit to get over, and we're still talking about it today. But do you look back at that moment and be like, man, that was an incredible journey you guys were on, that team was on? Do you see that as a negative? Do you see it? Like, talk to me about that a little bit.
Well, it was two seasons always. So, first season was Big Ten champion. Second season was the bowl game. And it was hard to merge the two, really. I mean, ultimately, you're like, okay, we want to win the big game. We want to win the championship. But it was hard to merge them together because they were so far apart. And you couldn't even control your destiny in terms of whether or not you made it to the national championship. So, somebody selected you. So, obviously, if you went undefeated at Ohio State, you most likely were going to make it. But there was no guarantee. But then once you lose a game, then it's like, okay, they just have to decide. So, you split the season up. You're like, okay, let's take care of the Big Ten. Let's beat the teams who are right in front of us. And then after that season is over with. And then you have to come off of that season completely, take a little bit of a break. And you start working towards season number two, which was whatever bowl game you were in or whatever, the national championship or whatever. I went to all BCS games or championships. So with that next big game. So the season was a success, but season number two was not. The championship game was not a success. And it's really kind of – that's how I always looked at it even after the fact. Like, then we had a really good season. Troy Smith was a Heisman Trophy winner. It was a really good season. We had a very bad bowl game. And you almost have to separate it because the way it was structured, it was really – so it was unlike a season football game because now you're preparing for a team for a month, which is completely different than the way, you know, football operates. So
that's right. Well, and then it happened the next year, and that was crazy because – Illinois, right? I think Illinois upsets you guys. And at that point, it was like, well, it's over, right? We're not going to go in it. And then the last day of the year, last day of college football, I think West Virginia was playing. LSU was down there, like number 6 or 7. All of a sudden, when that evening, when the late games ended, Ohio State was in, right? You guys were in because everyone else had lost. Yeah. So all of a sudden, Ohio State's number 1. You're like, hold on, this is crazy. We're having arguments about who number 2 is. Ohio State was the one on the outside looking in. That was nuts. Do you remember that? I mean, you talk about like not remembering a lot from early in your college career because I get it because it's probably like just so many things are happening. The next thing you know, you're playing in the national championship versus LSU where you grew up, right?
Yeah. And that was year 2 for me, so I remember everything from that year.
Okay.
and we actually watched the 2 games. I think one game was West Virginia. I think they were playing Pittsburgh. And the other game was Arkansas playing LSU, I believe. No, not LSU. Arkansas playing Missouri, maybe.
That's
it. I can't
remember.
I think
you're right. I think Missouri was the other team.
It was 2 teams that were 1-2, West Virginia, I think Missouri or somebody else, that nobody really thought they would be 1-2. Like, nobody expected those teams to actually be in that position. West Virginia was really good that year, Pat White and everything. So we watched both games. Chester brought us all into the team room. We put the games on the big screen. and we're rooting for one of the teams to lose, and they both lost.
That
so
crazy.
We went from like number three or whatever to number one, and now we're trying to figure out, okay, well, who are we going to play? Because I feel like everybody lost, so there was like a question of who we wanted to play. And of course, SEC, because the SEC was strong, they were going to put a SEC team in there. But yeah, I mean, that was my redshirt freshman year, so I started in that national championship game. And it's weird because the LSU, their tendencies all year, which, I mean, you should do, but their tendencies all year, throwing the ball, they had really good receivers, Brandon LaFell, different guys. Of throwing the ball to all their receivers, they broke their tendency, and they really just kind of ran the ball and threw the ball to the tight end, who they never threw the ball to all year.
Yeah.
And that really got the better of us.
Yeah. Well, the game started off good, I know. But, yeah, I mean, it's a crazy time because I remember watching ESPN, and all the coaches were coming on and the analysts, and everyone's, like, campaigning, and they're talking about who should be there. And it's in a way, it's fun because it's, you got to watch it, right? Like, you guys are sitting there watching it. We're sitting there watching it. Everyone's watching it. Like, this is fascinating. We got to wait. Like, who's going to be number two and who's Ohio State going to play? And then you fast forward to today, and a lot of that's happening again. And I think, you know, they certainly love the debate, but to me, it's kind of crazy because football's played on the field. Like, we can sit here and argue all day about who's better and who would win. And, you know, there's assumptions and there's matter of factness of like, well, it's an SEC team, so of course the SEC team needs to go because they're the best. And, you know, a lot of people who don't understand it. You know, no doubt the SEC is very good, but it's kind of crazy to me, right, that's how we're deciding national champions on, not necessarily deciding the national championship on paper, but who's going to play for it on paper, and then we're going to match these two teams up in a game that's going to be a month away, maybe 2 months away. It, you know, as a player, it's frustrating. It's got to be.
It's completely flawed, but, I mean, you just kind of adapt to the flawed system, because I mean, to be honest, there's no perfect way to do things, and especially when you got college athletes who are amateur, you know, if we want to call them amateur, they're amateur. So you can't have a long playoff where you have guys who came here to go to school and play football, but now you drag on their season. And football is unique in that it's not like basketball where you can play one day and then the next day you can play another game. You play a game this week, you have to wait a week to play the next game because you have to recover from all the, you know, running into each other the week before. So to really create a real playoff, I don't think they may eventually do it, but I don't think it makes sense or is right for college football, because these guys aren't getting paid to do this. I mean, at some point, you got to limit their games to a certain amount of games. They can't play on and on and on. So it's a flawed way to do things, and it's a tough position to be in when you're close, but you don't know if you're going to get in because you can't control it. You can do everything right on the field. You can win all the games you're supposed to win. Imagine, I think it was UCF one year when they won. I think they went undefeated.
Yep. 2 years ago, I guess now.
And from there, they just went to a bowl game. It's like. We did everything we're supposed to do. We beat everybody they put in front of us, and we don't have even the option. It's a foregone conclusion before we even step on the field that we can't make it to a playoff. They may end up doing a good job of beating a big school in a bowl game, but it's like it doesn't matter. They've already decided that we can't make it. So it's definitely a flawed way. But that, I mean, life is flawed. Right? You can only control what you can control at the end of the day. So, that's just the way it is.
It is. Yeah, it's actually right. I mean, so there's a few things there too. So first of all, going back a little bit, you compartmentalize it. I love how you explain that. So you say, well, we had a successful season and we had this next season and we did not have a successful season. So what can we do to get better from there? And I think when you can compartmentalize the different things, you can have failures, right? I think it's okay to lose and recognize that loss and get better for it. And then looking at, well, we could get in the NCAA in a second and just amateur athletics as a whole, but a flawed system, what are you going to do about it? Because you, Chimdy, you can't be at Ohio State. So, well, this is a flaw. You might be able to change it down the road and people get together and say, we got to change this. But in the moment, the rules are the rules. What are you going to do about it? And you just have to play with it. Like you said, do what you can control. And I'm sure that's what Coach Trussell was talking a lot about, of we can only control what's in front of us. We do the best that we can with that, and then we let the chips fall where they may, right? And, you know, I think that's the only way to look at it, because if not, you just drive yourself crazy. I know it drives fans crazy, but like you're saying, like, we're going to have a playoff, they're going to push, we're going to go to 18s, we'll go to 16 teams. It's like, we watched in the NBA Finals just ended when we're recording this last night, and I mean, these guys have been playing basketball for so long, and now you got two of the best players in the league that are basically gone for a year, and it's crazy. And I don't know if that's the reason why they got hurt, because they've been playing so much basketball over the years, but that's basketball. You talk about football, and you're having to play games against teams that really you probably shouldn't even be on the field against. You know, I've seen this, and you're like, this quarterback's going to get killed because the entire defensive line for Ohio State's going to be in the NFL one day, and this guy is 6'1", 180 pounds, and he's not going to survive this game. But I get it, because if his program doesn't play and get to show up to the shoe, they're not getting the big payday that they need to even keep the program going. And I get it, Ohio State's got an incredible brand, and they will always, it seems like, always have an incredible brand. But you guys are amateurs, right? You're not getting paid a dollar for this. And, you know, there's a lot of frustrations. I know, walking around campus and you see all the Ohio State gear, you know, down High Street and all that. And not one player, and this is across the country, that gets anything for it. And it's difficult because, again, like we talked about before, there's a lot of diversity and people coming from all different, you know, walks of life to come play college football. Did you focus on that at all at Ohio State? Or were you just really focused on your craft and say, man, this is amateur sports, man. This is more, and then you realize it later, right? This is more NFL than maybe the NFL is at times.
Yeah, I think at the time, I mean, I think for me personally, I can only speak to my personal experience. I was in a unique position in that I recognized that if I played well, I would go to the NFL. I'm playing at Ohio State. I'm playing cornerback at Ohio State. The guys before me who did well, who started for Ohio State, they went to the NFL. So if I did the same thing, I'll go to the NFL. So for me, it was a big opportunity. Right? It was a huge opportunity to be able to do something that I kind of dreamed about. So that was primarily my focus. As I got closer to being in that position where I was going to be able to get drafted, I became an upperclassman, a senior or whatever. That's when I started to kind of see, you know, we're bringing a lot of money to Ohio State. My jersey's being sold currently when I was a senior. My jersey is in the stores right now. I'm not getting any of the revenue from that. So you see Terrell Pryor's jersey being auctioned off online, and I'm thinking, wow, his jersey went for that much? But Ohio State's getting the money for that, And then all the stuff comes out about the tattoos and TP selling his jersey for, like, I don't know, he sold it for like $100 or something. I don't know. And then I go back, well, he just sold his jersey for enough to get a steak dinner. But I just saw his jersey get auctioned off online for way more than that. Stuff kind of, I started to open up my eyes a little bit more, but like I said before, that's the current system. You want that, you want those things to change, but at the time, you know, you have to do the things that you can control and make sure you make the most of how the game is set up. Because when in football, there's rules that you, as a corner, me specifically, like, there's pass interferences that are called that I don't necessarily agree with, but I understand this is how they're going to call it, so I need to make sure that I play according to how the game is being called. So the same way in life. I mean, some of these rules don't make sense to me. Some of the stuff that's set up doesn't make sense, but life is never fair. So you just got to understand the game and try to make sure that you maximize your time at Ohio State in other ways to set yourself up for life after football.
Well, I mean, the mindset you have is amazing, and just to hear you talk, and that's why it's so important for, you know, you're out there in the community, you're sharing your message. It's like, you got to live with it and move on. And you see it all the time. Like you said, on the field, it's just, it could be a 20-yard pass play and they throw interference flag and you're like, what? I didn't do anything. You know, how are we throwing this flag? And it was third and 10 and now they got a first down. Are you serious? And that could change the outcome of the game, or it maybe not change the outcome, but it could lead to possibly a different outcome if things play out. Dealing with the frustrations like you had at Ohio State and seeing that with Terrell Pryor and what he had to go through. And, you know, you've seen it before. And there's a story, and talk about Michigan necessarily, but it was like the story of Chris Webber walking down the street after they had lost a championship and he sees his jersey in the store and he's like, this is crazy, man. Like, they're making all this money and I get nothing. And then his assistant coach is like, and he was gone. As soon as he saw that, it was over. And you hear those stories over and over again. But that's what you have to live with, like you said, because those are the rules that are in place. So you're there at Ohio State, and social media was really starting to come about. Like, it just was kickstarting, if I'm not mistaken. The iPhone 2007 comes about. And I think today, especially over the last few years at least, college athletes have this incredible opportunity, because if you play at Ohio State, you got, like, how many people fit in the horseshoe right now? 105, 110,000, and you got fans all across the globe, really. And you can interact with them now, one-to-one. It's no different than how we connected on LinkedIn. Like, man, I just see all the good that you're doing. We just have a connection there. We start messaging each other. And, hey, you want a podcast chat? Yeah, let's do it. And it's, you know, we never have this conversation if it's not for LinkedIn, if it's not for social media. And I think if you can take the mindset that you have, like, listen, we're not going to change the NCAA today. Hopefully it changes, because it needs to. Amateur athletics is kind of, in many ways, it's a very flawed system. But at the same time, there's an opportunity for college athletes to brand themselves while they're in school, because when they come out, if they get the good advice, when they come out of school, man, they're still fans. Like, I guarantee you, if I go talk to Ohio State fans, they're going to know exactly who you are, and they're going to remember you there, and they're going to remember the teams that you played on. Did you get involved with social media? Like, was it Facebook? Obviously, was the one. So you probably had a Facebook account at that time. But did you deal with that social media at all while you were at Ohio State?
Yeah, and when I was there, social media just kind of got going, and I think I got on Twitter maybe my junior or senior year, I'm not sure. And I don't even think I got on Instagram. I'm not sure when Instagram.
Yeah, that was a few years later.
I don't even think I got on Instagram at all. And I remember at that time, our coaches and staff were so anti-social media at that time, because all they saw was as a way that guys could get in trouble. Somebody's going to post something that they shouldn't post. It's going to be on the news. So that energy kind of kept most guys away from doing too much on social media or communicating too much with people on social media. And then also, you know, just being more new, you know, you get negative comments on there. So you wanted to stay away from that stuff too. So, I mean, outside of Facebook, we didn't really get too active on social media. Nowadays, you got, you know, guys in college, if you catch an interception in a game now, you probably gain yourself 5,000 followers.
Easy.
So, it's amazing how it is. And it's just one of those things where, okay, you're not able to maximize your brand while you're playing before, but now social media gives you that avenue. So it's definitely something that they should be cognizant of, and just understand, like, you know, I can gain this influence right now if I'm interactive with my fans and maintain that influence after I'm done. So, yeah, it's definitely a great opportunity for guys currently.
Yeah, I know. I would absolutely take advantage of it. I still think there's an opportunity for even players like yourself. You haven't been at Ohio State in a while, but you're very recognizable within Ohio State's community. And you're obviously doing a lot of great things and being an entrepreneur, because I think that I'm seeing a lot of that, whether it's on social media or just in general. You hear about what Jim Tressel did. You hear about what Coach Urban Meyer did. And it's football is obviously the driver of all of it, but there's a lot of other things that happen after. And then you go to the NFL, and we'll touch on this. You go to the Oakland Raiders, you're drafted in the fourth round. And you know, you tell a story real quick, because your NFL career can end for many different reasons. You know, there's just constantly new guys coming in, and you know, you might be getting a little bit older, and there's the obvious one, which is an injury. And I believe, and I heard you tell the story on your video, that you were playing against Buffalo. and you tore your hamstring, and that was, it sounded like maybe, oh man, can you get back to, because you're a very athletic player, right? Can you get back to where you were? But that's just the thing. Like, you go from college to the NFL, and it's, you might not even go from college to the NFL. You might be a very good college player. You don't make it to the NFL, but then you do make it to the NFL, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're guaranteed a 15-year career, right? Things change. And I mean, I think the average lifespan, right, is what, 2 to 3 years in the NFL? Is that what happened? Did you have an injury? I think it was on a special teams play, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like the final nail. But really, from Ohio State going to NFL, I had an issue that I didn't really know about until probably my last year. Both my hip bones, it's like I got like a hip impingement. And that limitation, developing that limitation, stressed everything else. And over time, you know, my knees started to bother me, because the knee's not supposed to move. It's not supposed to compensate for the hip. And the hip is supposed to have more of the range of motion, and the knee's supposed to be more stable. And then once my, you know, knee injury started getting a lot of swelling in the knee, and all that swelling in the knee affected my hamstring tendon. Then eventually that tendon just pops. So that's kind of the progression, right? It started in college, and then it kind of followed me into the NFL. But, yeah, I mean, that's just the reality of it. You really don't know, because if you asked me coming out of college what type of NFL career I was going to have, I would have told you I wouldn't be the best corner in the NFL without question, because that was the type of confidence I had at that time. But I didn't realize, you know, the issues I had also. Like, that stuff, you don't know for sure about those things until you're under the pressure and you're going through the stress of an NFL season over and over again. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of what it was. But I always reminded myself, or told myself, that the NFL was going to be a head start for me. It's going to be a head start. There's going to be a lot of life after football. I'm gonna have more life not playing football than I did playing football. So I need to make sure that I put that same energy into doing everything else, whether it's being a father or a husband or whatever. Put that same energy that I did into football into everything else.
I love that, man. And I see it when I read about you and I see your video and I'm talking to you, and that you saw it as, this is an opportunity, this is a head start, and I'm going to do all these other things. Like you said, you got married, you have a daughter, you have started these businesses, you're part of the community. And let's talk about real quick about your Pit Barbecue Grill. You go out there, and what I love about it is, we want to be a part of the Columbus community. It's not just a restaurant where you get good food. Of course, that goes without saying. It's more than that. And I think you're creating that, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, when I come back, and we usually try to get up to Columbus at least once, maybe not twice, if we can, twice a year, we're coming to the Pit Barbecue Grill, man. But what was that? Like, how did you decide to start a restaurant? I mean, obviously you're from New Orleans, and food's a big deal right there, right? So you come to Columbus, is that like, cause it's ingrained in you?
I think when I was in college, I feel like there were some restaurants missing. I feel like there were some things in Columbus that, I would have liked to see. So I kind of had in the back of my mind, talking with friends, like, you know, we should probably try to do a restaurant here. Something that we like, something that we think other individuals would like, something that was similar to restaurants that we grew up going to and the community enjoy. But then I kind of shifted to wanting to do a franchise, and going through that franchise process reminded me why we wanted to do our own thing at the beginning. Because there was no connection. There was nothing that we felt really connected us to the community and put out a product that we were really proud of. So then that's when we just decided to try something. And, you know, to be honest, we've never done a restaurant before or anything like that. So, you know, we recognize that this may not work out. Like, restaurants aren't, the restaurant business isn't the business that is close to being guaranteed to be successful. But we decided we were going to do it our way. We're going to make it a community thing. We're going to make sure we put it in a community that we care about. So we didn't necessarily, if somebody was to say, what's the best location to put this restaurant? We didn't necessarily pick the best location, but we picked the location that meant the most to us at that time. And we think that, that type of focus really kind of helped us, because it allowed individuals in that community to want to support it. And from there, we just can try to continue to grow.
And you have, so you have the restaurant, and you have other things going on. And going back to what you said, like you looked at the opportunity of building a franchise, but you saw, man, I think this is when the true entrepreneur in you is coming out. You're like, no, that's not for me. I'm going to go out here and build this. And you know what? If it fails, it's going to be my fault, and I'm going to deal with it. And you're going to put yourself out there. And I love that. And that's what we did. And that's why it's just, when you see something like that, that's out there, and there's a like-mindedness. That's why we love having these types of conversations. So the Pit Barbecue Grill, is, in a way, you have a daughter, but it's another baby. It's a business, but it's, and there's so much that you're probably putting into that, but you have other things going on as a true entrepreneur would. Talk to me a little bit about what else you're doing in the business community.
Yeah. So, I'm trying to make sure I focus myself. And one thing about being an entrepreneur is a lot of times you see a lot of great opportunities, and that opportunity is for you. But one thing I'm passionate about, in the same community where we opened up the restaurant, I want to develop new build homes. And I'm working on, I want them to be affordable homes. And the thing about the Columbus market, if you understand the way Columbus is growing, a lot of the value of these homes are going up in the city, inner city Columbus, and this area is also going to continue to go up and price a lot of people out of purchasing these homes. So before that happens, I want to develop some new bills and allow individuals to get in now and purchase these homes, and purchase some brand new homes, and be able to ride that wave as Columbus market continues to go up.
Yeah, it sounds like you're giving back a lot to the community. I know you've done some stuff with helping, middle school and high school kids, at risk youths, and giving back to the community that way as well. Just you recognizing that you do have influence, that you had an opportunity to play football at Ohio State, and you had an opportunity then to take that to the NFL, and then you realize that that was the head start to then lead you to you got your whole life ahead of you, right? I mean, the NFL career can end, or a professional career can end, but you're just getting started. I'm blown away by the mindset, because it's powerful, and it could lead to many amazing things. And there's a lot of people transitioning from professional sports or early on career type stuff that they have to then go out and become almost, like you say, like the real world, perhaps. What advice do you have for NFL players like yourself that are maybe still in their career? Like, what can they be doing today to set themselves up, or that transition to moving on? Because it can't be easy, right? It's not easy for anyone, I don't think, from going from college to playing professionally, or just going out into the real world at that point. It's not an easy thing. I mean, it's just like, it's a wake-up call. But if your mind is set before and you understand what the opportunities are ahead of you, wow, there's a lot of stuff that you can do, and you're going to learn along the way. I mean, that's what it sounds like you've done. I mean, it wasn't just like, perhaps a light went off, but there's a lot of things that you had to do to get your mind right, to get to that point, to then build the restaurant and start working on these homes and all the other things that you have going on. But what advice would you give to professional athletes today to, like, man, because I would say this, talk to someone like Chimdi, because he's doing a lot of good right now.
Yeah, I think every athlete understands game plans, right? Every athlete understands game plans. And in the context of sports, it makes perfect sense. If we could take that same approach to everything outside of sports, I think that would be probably my best advice, to be able to say, okay, this is what I want to do in life. These are the categories and the things that are most important to me. And I listed what's most important to me, and now I need to make sure that I create a plan to improve and attain the things I want to attain outside of whatever my respective sport is. And if I create that plan, I'm not going to be able to perfectly execute that plan. So when I have those failures or I miss opportunities or I do things that I recognize weren't the best way to do them, I look at that and say, how can I get better? Because in football or in sports, we watch ourselves. We're self-aware. We understand, all right, we didn't execute the game plan properly. What did we do wrong? What was wrong? What do we need to change? If we did those same things in all the other categories that are important to us in our lives, we would also improve in those areas, which will make us more complete as an individual. And as we continue to build up ourselves, we also should grow our community, build up our community, connect with like-minded individuals, connect with like-minded people. I may be an NFL player and I might be one of the best at what I do. Well, find somebody who's the best at real estate. Find somebody who's the best at restaurants. Find somebody. While I do have this ability to connect with people because of what I'm doing, make sure you connect with some of the people who are the best at what they do, so that while you're growing as an athlete, they're helping you grow as a entrepreneur and whatever else you focus on or what you want to do outside of your sport. And if you're able to build up yourself and build up your community, once you get done, there's a lot of opportunity out there, and you're prepared for it.
Well, Chimney, what you just shared right there, I mean, that's what it's all about. And I think professional athletes need to hear it. I think just any professional needs to hear it. And I'm honored that you were able to come on and spend this time with us talking about this. I wish you nothing but the best with all that you have going on. I hope we can stay connected. Like I said, when I come to Columbus, I'm with my family. We're coming to the Pit Barbecue Grill. Someone is listening right now. They want to go get something to eat today or you know, in the future. Where is the Pit Barbecue Grill? And also, what's the best way people can connect with you?
So the Pit Barbecue Grill is in the Northern Lights Shopping Center. That address is 3545 Cleveland Avenue. For anybody familiar with Columbus, it's off of Cleveland Avenue. It's about a mile south of Morse Road. So if you're familiar with Columbus, you know where Morse is.
Yes.
Get to Cleveland or Morse and go about a mile south. It's right there, Northern Lights Shopping Center. The best way to connect with me, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. On Instagram, I'm ChimCheck35. On Twitter, I'm ChimCheck. I mean, that's the best way to reach out to me, connect with me, follow me. And yeah, I'll just be continuing to try to better myself every day.
Well, we see it, and I mean, I see you writing for Letterman Row. I see you having conversations about talking about the Ohio State football program. You're talking about your restaurant, helping the community, being a true entrepreneur, spending time with us on this podcast. Man, I'm just grateful, like I said, that you gave us all this time to chat with us. And like I said, hopefully we can continue to stay in touch, and we'll be watching absolutely everything that you have going on. But awesome talking to you. Go Bucks, and thanks again, man.
All right, thanks, man. Thanks for having me, and go Bucks.
Chimney, it has been absolutely awesome having you on this podcast. Because of your passion and lessons in sports and entrepreneurship, we are all better off from the time we spent with you. The perspectives from Chimney on constant improvement are now perspectives you, the business leader, can use for yourself. And for that, Chimney, thank you. And for anyone looking to talk to Chimney about his football or entrepreneurial journey, we encourage you to reach out to him. And if you're in Columbus or heading to Columbus, be sure to stop by Chimney's restaurant, the Pit Barbecue Grill. If you have questions, feel free to reach out to me directly. You can find me on LinkedIn or contact me on Twitter at Eric_Cass. Thank you for listening to our CasSource podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, Building and Protecting Your Business One Podcast at a Time. Until next time, we're out of here. We're all in. Play my cards right. This podcast exists in large part because of CASCM, the content marketing business inside CASSource Inc. CASCM is excited to bring the content marketing services used at CASSource to you. Learn more by visiting CASCM.com.